This one's good if it goes.
Oh, it did. Holy goodness.
Cow.
Are you kidding me?
Let's it go.
He can fry an egg on his head right now. I mean, the guy's sizzling.
I guess you got to hope for a dramatic three.
Oh, boy.
Oh, they got it. Oh,
Jones. Oh, yes.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dukich, the definitive college basketball podcast.
So we're going to welcome in the great Dan Hurley to the world's greatest podcast known as Courtside. I got a question for you. Now, you're a guy of kind of, you're part new school, part old school, but you're, well, more part old school. The job of being a college basketball coach today, is it anything like you thought it would be when you got into coaching?
Oof, that's a tough start. it's gotten way more complicated. But, you know, for me, I think, you know, just kind of growing up, coming up in like a basketball family with Bob Sr., like I've kind of seen the evolution, of it, as a player for him. And then, I think what prepared me well was like being a high school coach for 9 years, Seth, when, I had seven or eight McDonald's All-Americans in those 8 or 9 years I was at St. Benedict's. So I was seeing, from the grassroots and exactly kind of what was going on with high level players and, how the kind of recruiting was changing, in terms of the amount of people that were now getting involved with a kid. Obviously, things like the portal, social media, that these things have obviously made coaching, college coaching, like particularly challenging.
Do you ever think when you were putting the chairs away at the bingo hall, you'd be drinking mushroom coffee from the Netherlands?
No shot. Come on. I would say to my wife all the time, I'm just a dirty, kind of like a dirty, dirty kid from Jersey City, just like a dirty kid that just ran around the parks all day, is now like the head coach at UConn. It's crazy.
Hey, UConn, let's talk about that. What is the – there's a big difference in terms of environment for being a city school and now being at a college campus. And Storrs is the requisite, the preeminent – one of the preeminent college campuses. Can you talk about the difference coaching in those two different environments?
Yeah, I mean, it's – yeah, obviously the amount of people that care. I think, when I was at Wagner and we lost like an important conference game, I mean, you could count on one hand how many people were critical of you or, were disappointed in you. And, you get to a place like this and, the noise is significant, the amount of people that are impacted by the success of what you're doing, the amount of critics that you have, is increased greatly, but just like the scope of the job, like when you turn on an NBA game and you see, Drummond and Kemba and you like work across the hallway from Gino and you're following two national championship coaches, like that's some like serious, serious, job pressure to perform at a high level.
This season, you had like three different seasons. Obviously we dealt with everything, the protocols and the pandemic, but you had your season, start of season, obviously the evolution of Book Night. You had a cook coming back a little bit. You had Book Night go down. You had him come back at the end of the season through all that drama. Was he going to come back? Wasn't he going to come back? How difficult is it during the course of a season, especially in a pandemic, to deal with just so much uncertainty within your roster and kind of keep yourself moving forward? I mean, just in terms of coaching philosophy.
Mushroom coffee this morning is particularly excellent, by the way. Four Sigmatic, shout out. I mean, listen, it wasn't easy. I mean, compared to, I don't want to get myself in trouble again, but, compared to what, frontline workers and medical were dealing with. Obviously, it wasn't a big deal, the challenges of a basketball season, but relative to, to coaching and playing in the COVID season, it was tough. I mean, our guys, forget like Book Knight, getting hurt and then not being able to get a rhythm. And when such a big piece goes out and disruption and having freshmen that were recruited to be like frontline players that didn't get the full ramp up of a full summer, a full preseason, a non-conference slate to get them prepared for going to a better league than we were in. I mean, like we were also transitioning from like a really good basketball league to like one of the best top five, top seven, top six. So, that was a challenge, but for me, it was just the message of just being grateful, to be able to get together as a team and as players and coaches and do what we love. Like basketball, is the central part of all of our lives. And like if we're going to have to miss 10 days, but then we're going to get the opportunity to get back in and do what we love doing together and get a chance to have a season, like we're just going to have to be mentally tough and be grateful for whenever we do get a chance to play. And we were so determined to like put together an NCAA quality season after missing a tournament here for four or five, whatever years it's been. Like we were pretty focused on reaching that goal too.
I think there are differences in places for the NIL and brand management and all that. Keith Dambrot at Duquesne just hired a young guy to be his brand manager to do those things. Stores in Connecticut, to me, you and Gino's team, the biggest teams out there. Are you doing anything looking forward to get ahead of the game, or are you doing anything with individual players' brands?
Yeah, I mean, so we just met with Dave Benedict, the athletic director, and having a plan in place, this summer for the guys, obviously. Like you said, Dan, it's like, major opportunity here being that there is no professional sports team, in the state. You've got minor league baseball. We have the WNBA as well, but, UConn men's and women's basketball is king. I mean, you're treated from a media standpoint and from a fan base standpoint like the pro sports team of a state. I think, Coach Calhoun said when I got here, there's 3 million people that live in the state of Connecticut, and 2 million of them are UConn fans. Now, I don't know if Coach was like nailed the census numbers, but Coach is the GOAT, so I just took it. Mount Rushmore, Coach. So
is unbelievable. What's going on now? Guys are gone now, right? You guys have a chance to take a step back, peruse the portal a little bit and, kind of reboot and kind of get ready. When will you bring your guys back?
Yeah. So we took 2 weeks off, when it ended in the bubble for us prematurely. And we gave the guys 2 weeks off, and then we got back on the court and in the weight room. And we did about, 4 weeks of like skill work and fundamental offensive work and shooting and, really tried to go light, and really get a sense of, whether the portal was going to be, an option for us. I mean, we bring back, eight rotation players and we bring in a top 10 recruiting class, three freshmen that are top 50 level players. So, I think that, the cornerstone of what we do is player development. And I believe in my ability to get my, my freshmen ready to play. We got three really talented guys. I think, three guys that potentially could really elevate things here, and three guys got a chance to be pros. So, we're standing pat and we're, onto the 22 recruiting class. And the goal is to, continue to bring in, premium high school talent and be an outlier program that doesn't have a lot of transfers. Like I've had, I think in the last 5 or 6 years, I've had one or two non-graduate transfers that have left my program. So I've been an outlier in college basketball. Like the epidemic of transfers, transferring hasn't hit me, because I build a culture that players want to be part of. And when I recruit young players, I put them on the court right away, and I don't overpromise them before they get here. And before they come here, they know that I'm going to be on their ass. They know that I get after it. You know, that I don't necessarily have an off switch. And most of the kids that choose to come play for me, they're pretty desperate to make this basketball thing work. And I'm pretty desperate as a coach.
How selective then are you? Because, you know, you and I both know, you know, a lot of kids don't want that. So you have to be, I would guess, obviously ability, you got to have a certain ability, but you got to have a certain mentality, don't you, to play for you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing about me is I'd say in that, like, I'm pretty demanding down with these guys with like the personal habits, obviously the, you know, the way, you know, what time to go to sleep, you know, what their diet's like how they show up for study hall, like being on time, like, you know, just carrying yourself the right way, building the right types of habits, like really developing personally. So you have the, you know, the skill set when basketball is done to, you know, to excel and succeed in this world. You know, and then obviously the, you know, the basketball piece, I think a kid knows exactly what they're getting from me. You know, the families do, they know that it's going to be a guy that, on the practice floor is going to push them to their absolute limit, and challenge them and really prepare them in a real intense environment. But then on game night, I try to shift, and become more of a supporter. I mean, if I'm screaming at people on game night about stuff that I didn't clean up on the practice court, then it's too late anyway. And, you know, so like if you survive my practices and you are developing into the type of person that I want you to be, then on game night, I'm going to give you that freedom to go out there and play, and I'm going to support
you. You saved that for the officials anyway.
Hey, listen, that's like these, like, it's usually a game where I got like bad history with that guy. If you guys would just trace the history with like certain officials where I have these, because last year, I think I went like my first 10 games, no technicals, and then I got two in the next three. But.
So who don't you like? Just, let's go. Who's the jackass?
I don't do that to him, damn.
I have like two more. If I finish this coffee, I'll be so ramped up.
Right.
They know who they are. No.
But that is true. I mean, like, people think that coaches are supposed to be robots and officials. Hey, look, you walk out there, I don't like that guy. And you know what? He don't like you.
Yes. No, it's like that. I mean, it's like that. You do go into some games, because I never get the official list. Like some coaches, like I know Bob, I think Bob gets it like either the day before or the morning of the game. So then like he's got time to like stew on it. Where it's me, like I don't even want to, like, you know, they put that sheet in front of your door in the coach's locker room. I try to avoid looking at it because I don't want to know until I get out there, because I don't want it in my head. But you hope, like going into like certain big games, you know, you have to win. Like I'm like praying, like I hope this guy's not in the game.
Have you had any officials that did your dad's games back in the day? Now we're doing college, and you're like thinking, oh, Bob pissed that guy off. He absolutely used to rake that guy.
I don't think so, because a lot of the guys that my dad had coming into those Jersey City games, stuff that was going on. Rob Riley. Rob Riley, Big Ten guy. Yeah. He used to do my prep school. He's like a South Jersey guy. So he refed the game of mine versus, I think, Lawrenceville on the road when Joaquin Noah was the starting center there and J.R. Smith was like a senior for me at St. Benedict's, and we lost on the road. And I think I definitely got teed up. And then I think I even barked at him in the parking lot. but then me and Rob, like I have said to Rob, like, hey, Rob, you know, and I've had Rob a couple times since. He was actually, I had him at Wagner. It was still a little icy. And then I had him when we played Iowa at the Garden, I think, first year at UConn. And now the relationship is, I think, fully intact and I think at a good place. And I admitted my immaturity as a coach.
I want to go back, because I did it, barking at him in the parking lot. That's what I like. I went. People, like, how do I put this right? Like, people don't understand that you just don't get done with a game and you forget everything that just happened and you go in and everything. No, I'm chasing. I went in a room with one guy. I said, look, here we go.
Yeah. I mean, my dad, I mean, you have to think about the modeling too, Dan, for like,
yeah.
Like, I remember in like San Diego, I was a senior in high school, and like, you know, San Diego is like real laid back culture, right? Like, people are real chill there. The weather's great. Like, I think like somebody barked at my dad, like at halftime, we're up like 38 going into the locker room, and either a ref or somebody barked at my dad, and just like watching him like walk right up nose to nose, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, I've always, like, basketball is, you know, like, it was modeled to us, like, just how, like, how important the competition is, being, you know, like, just how important the game is, what we do together as a team, you know, what we achieve together, and how that sets up everything else for you in life in terms of learning how to be successful and, you know, and how to be great at something and to, you know, to not be a victim, but to be, you know, learn to be victorious. I mean, but yeah, I mean, these games mean everything to you. And when you feel like when you lose a game and it's like crushing loss, a game that you know you had to win, people have no idea how that affects you emotionally and mentally, your sleep, your relationships, your life, and not for a day or two, but for like a year. Like, if you have a bad season, like, or a disappointing end to your season, like the way we ended our season this year, like, this summer is going to suck. Like we accomplished a lot. We took a big step, but the way it ended for us, like this summer is not, if summer's going to suck the way we played against Maryland in the last 5 minutes of the Creighton game.
I try to tell people that, and this is me being totally shallow, right? This is me really being, I say, man, it's death. I go, I losing a game is death. Like, Danny, I literally I was depressed, couldn't get my head off the pillow my last couple of years at Bowling Green because we were playing football players. I said, oh, my God, we're going to lose. You know, you're trying to keep it close. I got depression. Like, I couldn't sleep in a bed. I had to sleep on a couch so I could roll over and hit the ground. It meant that much to me and made me that crazy. So, that's hard for people to understand, and I don't blame people not understanding that, but that's the way it is, no?
Yeah, I mean, to, you know, again, the modeling, my dad would lose a high school game, and, like, he'd be sick, you know, like, I just remember him being physically sick and either having to, you know, force himself into the probation office to go to work or take a day off the day after, like, losing to Ferris High School in the big game, like, that was modeled. So, like, yeah, I mean, this thing is so personal. It's so much a part of our identity. Like, when UConn loses and you're the leader of UConn and it's your program and it's a reflection on you and what you've created, then, yeah, I mean, you've just failed, and you failed in an incredibly public way. And it's not like the Twitter. It's not like social media. It's not these, like,
no,
these people on social media that don't know anything about what we're doing, or, like, you know, people with absolutely no background in coaching or basketball people. It has nothing to do with it. It's more just how you feel about what you just put on display and how what is so personal to you failed.
No one puts more pressure on coaches than they do on themselves. Now, the good thing for your dad is he only lost like one game a year.
All right.
I mean, he didn't live like the rest. Like, your dad didn't live like that. He was miserable, but, I mean, he was only, like, miserable once a year where he couldn't get out. When you lose three in a row in the ACC and you can't get your head out of bed, like, that's a full, like, you know, 10 days where all of a sudden, you know, life is, like, you know, really, really miserable. So, hey, and speaking of that, like, your brother had a rough year this year, and I know how close your family is. How many conversations that you guys have where either you're talking to Bobby or your dad's kind of reeling him in or reeling you in, or just like family powwows? Because you do it. The positive thing is you guys have an incredible support system because you've all lived it and live it 24/7. yet you have really good balance because I know how close your family is. So like the balance is amazing, but how were those conversations? Cause I can't even imagine like whether your dad just oversees them or, you know, sometimes you say, you know what, I'm going to call Bobby, but I'm leaving Dad out of this one today. like Big Bob, you're in the bullpen right now. Cause we don't need to deal with this right now.
I would say, Seth, the only time there's only one time where my dad has been like really aggressively critical of us. I'm sure he sits at home and scratches his head, like, what is this guy doing now? But we've always had to like seek it. So like we were at first year at Wagner, like we're playing like a really good St. Peter's College team. John Dunn, really underrated coach. He's at Marist now. And they had a tournament team that year. They went to the tournament and we were just trying to figure out how to be good. And I think we're up two with like 18 seconds left. They call timeout, side out their ball. We play very little zone historically. We decide to go zone to try to mess them up. They hit a three. We lose by one. My dad called Bob after the game, said, you two guys are effing idiots. Why don't you go zone? So that was it, though. I mean, after that, maybe he felt bad about it. He makes us like reach out to him. It's not like after like an epic failure, like the bat phone is going off and he's like, hey, you know, we got to, you know, the patriarch is like, you know, setting up a meeting. It's not like that. He's actually like really, really positive. When he turns negative on a player like that I'm playing, or now I know it's time to give up because like he's very, very pro player. Obviously I get invaluable advice. Bob, I mean, we have to pick each other up a lot. Like we're each other's coaching tree. I mean, I came into this business straight out of high school. I don't have a college coach mentor, and neither does Bob. I mean, we kind of cut our teeth together in the college game. So, you know, like when things are going, going south for either one of us, the other one has got to be there to pick the other one up. When it's going south for both of us, that is then a problem. Because, you know, then I guess we go to our therapist. I don't know where you go when that happens.
Hey, have you recruited against one another?
We, you know what we did. There was a kid last year in New Jersey that we had been recruiting for a while. That then Bob, you know, Bob offered they offered him a scholarship right as we were. I think pivoting towards another guy that we ended up getting that's outstanding. So, but yeah, we've always like, it's almost like we try to avoid it at all costs at some point though.
Do you think Seth Greenberg can pimp for more things? Like he's got his Adidas he's pimping for, the TBT he's pimping for. If you were
looks like a race car driver. He looks like a race car driver.
Have a couple spots open. Hey.
Yeah, I was going to say, on his right, you know, Ed's Garage, Sally's House of Nails. I mean, what should we go with?
I'm going to do something. Jake's sleeping right here. Hey, Jake's pushing for some type of dog products, personally. I mean, because he says as much time as he spends on this pillow right down here, that he should get a little air time. And what are you doing with your schedule now that Dan is taking us sideways? I mean, okay, Adidas, I like this sweatshirt. It was a little wet outside. I had to get a little workout in this morning.
Harry's House of Ill Repute.
we've got a return game with Florida this year, which that's a fun game. I think two real good brands. We're at Atlantis, you know, which you know makes my wife Andrea obviously, you know, makes her really happy. That's a real good field. But Bob's actually in that field. Arizona State's actually in that field.
Oh, whoa.
You know, Syracuse, which obviously anytime UConn Syracuse gets together, that's a love fest. I mean, these people, they despise each other, the fan bases, Baylor. So it's like, you know, that's a really good field. And then, I think it's like, you know, potentially Big 12 challenge, Big East, Big 12 challenge, which we're waiting to kind of hear on that. So
that's good.
Hey, Danny, thanks, man. Appreciate your time today. It's great stuff. It's fun stuff.
That was a pleasure with you guys, man. you know, just coaches, you know, like this, you know, I'm not kissing your guys' ass, but you know, like,
we're great guys.
No, well, I don't know about that, but coaching wise, basketball people.
Enjoy. And when do the guys come back on campus?
So what, first week of June, and we get after it eight to 10 weeks. We are in, like, we treat it like it's training camp. Like, we're not working on pivoting and outlet passing. Like, we're going live four days a week, an hour a day. You know, we've got these guys like going live, and we're competing, and like, we're really, really, you know, getting our freshmen ready to go. And with losing Book Knight, we got a lot of talent, but we got some talented guys that got to take got to be better. So rather than try to solve our problems in the portal, you know, we're going player development, and we're going to play our young guys, and we're going to take another step this year.
Sounds good. Take care of yourself the next 2 weeks. Get ready for it, man.
Yes. Yes. Head to Jersey Shore.
There you go.
Jersey Shore.
There you go. It doesn't get any better. You and Springsteen hanging out, I'm sure.
Yes. Yes. Long Branch.
Did He's you know Freehold, those guys? Back in the day, did you know all those Jersey Shore guys and girls? Were those your people? Were you?
No, but Mob Wives. So, but remember, I don't know, Mob Wives? You remember Mob Wives?
Oh, yeah.
Staten Island. So, like, I think, like, Mob Wives, while I was coming out of, like, the Hilton Garden Inn, where we used to put our recruits on weekends, one of the Mob Wives was also coming out, and she had just stayed overnight because she had plastic surgery across the street. And then I think, I don't know if it was Snooki, whoever was from Staten Island that was in the Jersey Shore came to one of our Wagner games, which is, we had a very extensive celebrity row there at those games.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, this is a big interview. When Dokic moves his interview location from the washroom to, you're not in the washroom today.
No, I got my favorite. This is my wife's wall here. She got her, you know, they get to the final eight. She got Pearl Washington telling her she's a great coach. That picture's the best, man, right there. Her picture's Jenna Kyra. Yeah, it's the Syracuse law. I forgot the UConn Syracuse hate. So,
but this is not the washroom, right? You're not in the washroom.
No, usually we do it in the laundry room. Not today.
He's usually in the laundry room. You dressed it up today.
For the situation here. You know, Snooki, the situation, the Jersey folk.
He went to my gym in Freehold, actually. The Sitch was the Sitch went to my gym in Freehold. No, I never, people gawked at him. I mean, that I was first year at Wagner then. It was like Planet Fitness in Freehold. I was still living in Jersey and commuting to coach at Wagner. You would get the occasional celebrity sighting of the Sitch.
So. DJ Pauly D. And did you know
Rhode Island guy, Paulie D. We tried to get him to MC Midnight Madness at Rhode Island. He was outside of our price range. He was too hot at the time. Didn't have the budget. So I jumped off a trampoline instead and dunked it.
You did what?
Jumped off the trampoline. So I jumped I think maybe my last year there. We didn't have enough in the budget to get an act for Midnight Madness. So kind of the entertainment piece was that I was going to dress up as the Ram, jump off a trampoline and dunk it, because we had a trampoline dunk team in. And then I would take off the Ram head and it would be me. But it was too heavy and cumbersome. I was going to get hurt. So instead, I put on the headband, a practice uniform. I ran down the runway. I jumped off the trampoline and dunked it successfully.
So. Did you land or did you hold on to the rim?
No, yes, I nailed it. I was born in pressure by being Bob's son and Bobby's brother. I mean, I've been born in pressure. I rose to the occasion.
Hey, just tell David I come cheaper than Snooki's brother or whoever the hell it is.
Right? Yes. Let's do it.
Hey, I've got a quote wall here. My wife and I do. We've got a quote wall. We're putting that up. I was born in pressure. That's a hell of a line right there. Seriously. Yeah. That's a hell of a line.
The things when you're that five, happen if you move into the office and not into the washroom. It's amazing.
Yes, a born impression.
Let's that's go. A great line.
Yeah,
that could go on your tombstone.
Yeah, I mean,
well, the guy's you're a guy now. Well, it's not the tombstone's a little early.
Yeah, no. But it's. I don't know.
Hey, my dad, hey, Seth, you know, so like when you're six and your brother's eight and it's like halftime of like a packed high school game and he goes to one end and you go to the other end and you're like shooting threes. And when you make it, you know, the crowd, you know, claps. And when you miss, they hiss, you know, like, yeah. And you're six. I ran a 5K race when I was 5 years old. In Jersey City, the Jersey City 5K through Journal Square. When I was 5 years old, I ran a 5K. I was competing in road races. Like, come on. Bob was...
Bob ran a tight ship.
Nothing. What's that?
Do you still carry the scars of being hissed at by the Jersey crowd at halftime? Do you carry those scars with you?
You know, when I was at Seton Hall, I felt like, that bothered me for a while, you know, and I'd say, you know, that affected me, like, you know, when you feel like, you know, like when your fan base kind of turns on you as a player, you know, especially at the college level back, you know, that was tough, especially back then, because it wasn't like this kind of nasty world of social media where people just don't like to see people succeed. Or you know, or just so negative about, you know, people that put themselves out there, you know, like real cowardly stuff. But like, I look back on my career more disappointed that I didn't do more with it, that I just, you know, that I wasn't more mature, that I didn't drink as much. You know, like, I wish I did things differently. I wish I was more focused on my career and didn't probably party as much as I did.
Hey, here's the last question. Did you know when your dad was going to throw you out of practice the week before the practice started, the real practice started? Because my favorite trip to Jersey City was when I came in to recruit Tyshawn the week before his real practice started. And he comes in, he goes, oh, I was meaning to call you. I said, what's up, coach? This is after going to every single week, the summer league. What was that gym the summer league was in Jersey City?
Hamilton Park.
Yeah, having a park.
The Golden Door.
Yeah, every week I'd sit there with Dad, watch the summer league, watch Tyshawn. He was trying to help us with him, and I roll in the week before their real practice is supposed to start, and he looks at me and he's like, "Oh, I was supposed to call you." I said, "Why? What's up? You guys aren't practicing?" He goes, "We're practicing for 5 minutes." I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Week before practice starts, I'm gonna throw these blank blank guys." I go, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "We'll go 5 minutes." I said. Like 5 minutes, he goes, he goes, first time that the ball goes somewhere it's not supposed to go, our guy does something stupid. He said, I'm going to lose my mind on these guys. And sure enough, I'm sitting there, and someone like doing the Nash drills.
Yes.
And half-assed the Nash drill. And all of a sudden, it was like, and like, he let me talk to Tyshawn after. And Tyshawn at that point knew, he goes, I thought this was the week.
Yes, yeah. No, like if somebody screwed, like if a guy was late for school, like if Roderick or somebody was late for school 2 days in a row, like I knew that afternoon practice was going to be brutality. You know, like the punishment for Rod was, you know, in his like, or a player, or if I was being a jerk in religion class with Sister Michelle, like, I knew like the team was going to pay this bill, but like he just, his understanding, I mean, like if he ever chose, you know, like to do the career thing and go to college and keep going, I mean, all time, one of the best coaches of his generation at any level. It's like when I found myself, my first week of practice at Seton Hall, PJ is incredible coach, right? Like all time coach. I was finishing like PJ sentences that first week in my mind as he was putting in his defense and different things, just because I just so well taught, so well coached. But yeah,
your dad, I say it all the time, best practice I've ever been to, and I've been to every college almost in the country and about three quarters of the NBA practices. Not even close. That's true. Not even close. You walk out of there, actually, I remember the first time as a head coach walking out of there and thinking, I know nothing about basketball. I mean, like, what is wrong with this picture here? I mean, he was incredible.
Hey, Seth, we ate Seth and Dale last thing. So we used, do you remember those stretch shoes? Platform shoes? Yeah, yeah. So, the big ball that you shoot with big ball? Yeah, so like we would play pickup in the summer, you know, and there'd be guys from all over. I remember like a Donald Foyle, like was like a going to a sophomore year Colgate. You got like Pat Sullivan. You got all these guys from all over Jersey coming to play pickup at White Eagle Hall in Jersey City because it's just the best. Like you couldn't find games, like pickup games, like better than that, like anywhere. Lloyd Daniels, like these guys would be in the gym. It'd just be like, you know, so like one day he's like, all right, here are the game rules. You can only shoot with your weak hand. You can't dribble while we had platform shoes on. Like to five. Like to five. Right? Like to five. Like the game would take like 45 minutes. Right? There'd be guys waiting. So, mad scientist.
That's awesome.
He's like you, Dan.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
A lot of craziness, but a lot of good stuff. That's the best stuff, man. I always told my players, look, you're playing for an idiot, so you're going to have great stories after.
Yes.
Thanks, Danny, man.
Appreciate you guys.
He's great.
That is awesome. That's terrific.
That's good. His dad, true story now. You'd walk out of his dad's practice, and I know you've been to him.
Yeah.
And obviously you were a coach, nice, Brad, but like you walked out – and he was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
His ability to see everything, like Larry Brown, when I'd go to his practice when he was with the Clippers, I was amazed that they could go boop, 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 boop. He could stop it. He could tell every single thing that went on those like four or five possessions, ODO. Coach Hurley, he could see what's going on there, here, there. And I mean, and he wasted no time jumping in and just saying X, Y, Z. And there was no BS to it. Danny said, let me tell you something. He is – his practices, big time. And his energy, his energy never drops. Amazing.
I like the way he doesn't shy away from coaching guys hard. I don't know. And he's right, man. Cowards are winning. In our world, cowards are winning. He mentioned cowards. I said it yesterday on my show. Cowards are winning, and that's the way the world is. But I like the fact that he's not a coward. I like the fact that he'll tell you right up front, hey, boom. This is what we're going to do. He does it. Obviously, he does it in such a way when he talked about not transferring that kids accept it and thrive in it. So there you go, Seth Greenberg.
Coach Guy, you know what? The best players want to get better. And to get better, you've got to be coached.
Yeah.
That's the way it is. Well, the world's greatest podcast never disappoints because it's real conversation. It's not that fluff stuff that other people get. It's just the way it is. That's what we do. That's what we do.
All right, brother.
And by the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't, at the end of the World's Greatest Podcast, wish the great Paige Greenberg, Cinco de Mayo, baby, a happy birthday. One of the great
Margaritas for everyone, baby. Margaritas for everyone.
It's a big next 2 weeks for the Paige girl, and 33 never looked better. Boom.
Thanks for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Check out more great podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.